All right, so Matt, I was talking with Ashley the other day, and I was like, you know, I can build pretty much anything, right? And she goes, yeah, almost anything, but I bet you cannot build a car out of spaghetti. So I took that challenge, and you should have seen her face when I drove pasta.
Meatball wheels.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales. All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing good, man.
Good.
Been looking forward to this for 8 years.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So before we get into that, a couple housekeeping things. One, next week is our Halloween live stream. Join us. You can find that information on our Facebook page. Go over there, check it out. You can find the link. You can find the time, all that stuff on our Facebook page. That's where it's going to be. You just go over there, click the link, join us next Friday evening after you do your trick-or-treating. Settle in and hang out with us.
Not in the group. On the Facebook page.
Right, not
on
the group.
On the Facebook page for the show.
Right. And we hate that, but the way StreamYard works is it will not stream into a group. It will stream to our public page, but we can't get it to go into the group. So, you, like Matt said, you have to go to our page to do it.
Yep.
Also, we've said this before, but send in your listener stories for this year's Halloween. This year's Christmas listener stories episodes that we always do. Yep. We've gotten some already. If you haven't sent it in, it's going to be here before you know it. Because at the first part of December, we're going to have to shut it off so that we can get the stories put together and the episode recorded.
Exactly. Yeah. You guys have wowed us for years.
Mm-hmm.
We expect nothing less this year.
Yep. Wow us again. It's on you. We couldn't do these shows, literally could not do these shows without you guys sending your stories in. We love hearing them, and I know the rest of our listeners will love hearing your story. Also, go to patreon.com/graveyardtales, sign up to become a patron. I'm not going to give you the whole spiel this time because I always do. But if this is your first episode of Graveyard Tales, go over there. We've got multiple different levels. You can get a back catalog that is a mile long. And if you're a $10 patron, you can get our second show, Side Quest. That's pretty much the short and sweet version. Also, check out our sponsors. If we have a sponsor on the show, we love the product, use the product, and we think you guys will too. And we can get you a discount if you use our code and our link that is in our show notes. All right, Matt, on that note, why don't you tell us, what is the 8 year thing that we're talking about tonight, brother?
All right. So in tonight's episode, we are going to step into one of the most chilling pieces of American folklore. The story of the Bell Witch of Adams, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for 200 years, stories of this unseen force that haunted the Bell family have endured. This was no ordinary ghost story, okay? Neighbors claim to hear its voice, feel its grasp, and witness its terrifying power. Everything from strange knocks in the night to violent attacks that drove a family to desperation, the Bell Witch has become one of the best documented hauntings in U.S. history. Adam and I have always, people have asked and asked and asked, and we've always said, that we might one day, I don't know, that so-and-so just did it. Blah, blah, blah. Well, it's time for Graveyard Tales to do the Bell Witch.
It is. So, as we always say, go check our sources. Down at the bottom of the show notes, you can find where we found all the information. Everything we talk about is referenced and sourced there. Like Matt said, we have put this off for a while, waiting for the right time. And you may think the right time was 6 years ago, guys.
And maybe it was.
Maybe it was. But this feels like the right time for us. You got Halloween coming up. It's Halloween month. And this is a scary story. It's close to our hearts, closer to Matt's heart, because it's
closer to Matt's house.
Geographically closer to him, yes. But I lived up there and I heard about it all the time. But let's just get into it. Now, the Bell family of Adams, Tennessee, they originated from North Carolina, but they've become a very, very notable family in American folklore for one particular reason, which we'll get into in the second half of this episode. Now, the patriarch, John Bell, and his wife, Lucy, moved their large family that included their children, John Jr., Drury, which is an interesting name, Drew R.Y., Drury.
I thought you were saying jewelry, and you were just mispronouncing it.
No, no, that Drury, D-R-E-W-R-Y. Interesting name.
I know. It's a strange name.
I like it, but then I also don't like it. So I don't know how to feel.
I'm going to refer to him as Drew later in the show.
So. There you go. That'll work. Keep him from sounding like me, Drury. Benjamin, Esther, Zadok, Betsy, or Elizabeth, Richard, and Richard actually wrote a diary about the events called Our Family Trouble, and Joel, and he moved them all to Robertson County, Tennessee in 1804, where they purchased a farm along the Red River. Now, the earliest section of the family that I could find was William Bell. He lived 1700 to 1754, and he was born in the Isle of Wight, Virginia. And he married Ann Jones in 1721. And then their children were John Bell, Arthur Bell, and Joshua Joseph Bell. John Bell, he was born in 1750. He was a farmer. He was the head of the family. And he initially was from Edgecombe County, North Carolina. He ended up being excommunicated from the local Baptist church in 1818 on charges of covetousness and contempt, which comes up, you know, later in the story.
I mean, basically bad behavior.
Right. Right.
I mean, you know, imagine if all the shady stuff that you've ever done in your life, which you're like, yeah, I'm not really proud of that. You know,
right.
You know, could get you in serious trouble.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, back then in a tiny town, hell, today in a tiny town.
That is true. In a small town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Small town scandals can ruin your life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. People know everybody's business in a small town.
Uh-huh.
And especially in the 1800s.
Oh, yeah.
They had nothing to distract them from your business. And so they were all up in your business.
Your business was the 6 o'clock news.
Exactly. Now, Lucy Williams Bell was John's wife. She was also from North Carolina. And she was known for her kind nature. And she couldn't read or write, they say. So, I mean, that wasn't uncommon for women back in those times. They didn't get to go to school like men did and all that. So that's not uncommon.
But it wasn't that uncommon for there to be men walking around that couldn't.
That's a valid point. It did take it wasn't like now where if you didn't go to school, your parents would get in trouble.
Right.
Then you might not go to school because you had to work on the farm.
Well, and
your parents needed you to harvest and stuff.
And I mean, life was hard. And, sometimes men would drop dead at the ripe old age of 31.
Mm-hmm.
And, if you had an 11-year-old son, he might become the man of the house. And that meant everything stopped because he had to come home and deal with the farm. True. And, protecting the women and all of that as a child. We've read numerous stories about those kind of situations. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was different then. So, but I think that also forced people to rely more on community,
mm-hmm.
and their churches, and your behavior in a small society was vital to your survival.
Yeah.
So, there was a lot going on. I mean, if you were shunned by your community, it could cause you a world of hurt.
Right, right. Now, we'll move down and go into John Bell a little bit more. Like I said, John Bell was born in Edgecombe County, North Carolina, and he began his career apprenticing as a barrel maker. And then he did that for a little while, and then he turned to farming. But he married Lucy Williams in 1782. And this doesn't get talked about much, but I found the information, so I had to put it in my notes. He married Lucy when she was only 12 years old, and he was 32.
That's insane.
It's
to me.
Ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And I know that the laws weren't on the books and people felt differently back then. Cause like you said, you might drop dead at 27, but that I don't care how fast people grow up. That age gap is too much.
Yeah,
sorry.
Right. Right.
Sorry. And I'm just going to say it. But I had to put that out there because I've not heard that talked about in other tellings of this. And I just thought, hey, I found it. I need to put that information in here. Now, John became a prosperous planter. And not only with raising a bunch of crops, he raised a large family, like I mentioned. Well, due to successive crop failures in the early 1800s, Bell moved his family west in 1804 and 1805, and he settled on a 320-acre farm along the Red River in Robertson County, Tennessee, which is near present-day Adams, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Now, the family lived a peaceful, prosperous life for 13 years on this farm, until the alleged supernatural events began. But Bell quickly gained prominence as one of the region's most successful farmers, and he became an elder in the Red River Baptist Church, the one that he was later excommunicated from.
Right.
Well, he died December 20th, 1820, which Matt will discuss more later. He's buried in the Old Bell Cemetery near Adams, Tennessee, alongside his wife and some of his children. And John Bell is remembered to this day as a hardworking, ambitious settler whose fate became inseparable from one of America's most notorious hauntings. But we also need to look at Adams, Tennessee a little bit. Now, you can't look up the history of Adams, Tennessee without most of your sources being about the Bell Witch.
Right.
It's such an integral part of the town's history that if you type in Adams, Tennessee, or you start looking up, when was Adams, Tennessee settled and all this stuff, the first thing, maybe the first two or three that come up are going to be, did you know that the Bell Witch occurred in,
right.
That's exactly why I'm looking it up, doofus. Just tell me what I asked. Well, Adams, Tennessee is a small city in Robertson County near the Kentucky state line. The origins of the town trace back to the late 18th century. The first settlers arrived in the area in around the 1790s or so. And the Red River Baptist Church, one of the earliest churches west of the Cumberland Plateau, was founded there in 1791. The town developed as a station on Edgefield and Kentucky Railroad during the late 1850s and was initially incorporated as Red River in 1869. It was later renamed Adams Station in honor of James Reuben Adams, who was a prominent landowner in the area, but then they shortened it in 1898 just to Adams, which then allowed me to move in and own half the town. No, I'm just kidding.
Now, use my name, I own half.
Exactly. Exactly. You owe me naming rights or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know if there's any towns named Matt.
Oh, I'm sure there are. Mattville, Mattburg.
I don't get a bill for property taxes, so I guess no.
Now, much of Adams' original infrastructure was destroyed during the Civil War, but the community was rebuilt, and it was incorporated as a city in 1963. So it took till 1963 to be incorporated. By the late 19th century, the town had several stores, mills, churches, a school, which became the community hub. And we're talking about the legal status of the city. The legal status of the city actually changed repeatedly. It was incorporated in 1869. Then it lost its city status in 1899. It regained it in 1908. And then finally officially was incorporated again in 1963. So it was like, you're in, no, you're out. You're in, no, you're out. Just kidding. Nope. Oh, wait. Nope.
Yeah. So, well, how does that happen? It's where the post office is. That's what we've learned that from previous shows.
Right. Right. Right.
Once you get a post office, you're set.
Yeah.
You're gold. If they close your post office,
That's probably what happened. They had a post office, then they didn't. Yeah. And then they had a post office, and the post office has been there since like 1962. And they said, all right, fine. In 1963, you can be an official town. But the town thrived with the advent of automobile traffic along U.S. Route 41. It was a major pre-interstate north-south road. But when nearby interstates were developed and everything, it started declining again. Adams remains a small rural community with a population of just 600 people, over 600 people, known for deep roots in Tennessee history and folklore, like I said, surrounding the Bell Witch. Now, the original Bell School was built in 1920, and it now serves as the city hall. And there was a log cabin that was constructed by John Bell in 1810 that was actually relocated next to this old school. Now, the once thriving central business area is, they say, now nearly a ghost town with only a few businesses remaining. And most of those businesses serve local agriculture. And like I said, the population has always been small, but as of 2020, the number of residents was only 624. Now, the Bell family farm in Adams was purchased by John Bell around 1804 when he moved there. And the farm initially consisted of 320 acres. And they were farmers, planters, very successful at what they did. And then they lived there for a little more than a decade before the events that Matt's going to talk about started happening. The Bell family is buried on or near the original farm, and John Bell's gravestone and the Bell Cemetery remain sites of interest for people and tourist sites and stuff. And the Bellwitch Cave is located on this acreage. And there was apparently a Native American burial ground found in this cave. Now, there's a quote that says, "The Bell family farm is deeply woven into both the region's history and national paranormal folklore, remembered for its prosperity, tragedy, and enduring mysteries," end quote.
Adam, let's talk a minute about bad habits. We've all got them.
Sure.
And you and I have shared a bad habit, for a long time.
Yeah.
But kicking bad habits, it doesn't have to be as difficult or as expensive as it once was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one of the easiest ways to kick the bad habit you and I are discussing is the Fume Zero.
Right.
Which, if you're not familiar with it, the Fume Zero is the newest product from Fume. It is a clean, simple way to change the course that you're on without pressure or judgment. There's no nicotine, no vapor, just flavored air, and it actually feels really good to hold on to.
Yeah.
Okay? It just like the original Fume, it's fiddly. Okay, and it's got some airflow and the chewy tip. Okay,
yep.
Being able to hold something in your mouth really helps with a lot of that part of the habit that makes you want to stick something right in your mouth and hold it there.
Right, right.
What other products can't do. So I've really enjoyed the Fume Zero, and it does kind of help, you know, with the habit that I would normally grab when I'm sitting up here working and researching and everything.
Mm-hmm. And here's why Fume Zero is different. It's affordable. It's just $24.99 U.S. dollars for a sleek pre-filled device. There's no commitment. There's no refills. There's no batteries. And like Matt said, there's zero nicotine, zero vapor. It's just natural, plant-based flavored air. And with 6 bold flavors and up to 10 days of use, Zero makes it simple and easy to start. So if you want to take zero chances with Fume Zero today, it's available for just $24.99. Just head to tryfume.com, that's TRYFUM.com, to start with Zero.
Yeah, take zero chances with Fume Zero today. As Adam said, it's available for just $24.99. Just head to tryfume.com, TRYFUM.com, to start with Zero.
And Matt may talk about this, but in the local lore, it's discussed several times, but there's also several historians that say it can't be verified. But Andrew Jackson apparently visited Adams, Tennessee.
Yep.
And the quote that they always use from that is, "I had rather face the entire British army than spend another night with the Bell Witch."
Right.
But, you know, that may be true. It may not be true. We don't know for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. Well, now, I mean, they do have evidence that General Jackson did go there. I mean, it's I think well enough documented that it's generally accepted as true that he did, because this the events did gain a widespread interest.
Sure.
Yeah. I won't say popularity.
But
they drew people from all over to come and experience this for themselves. I mean, it really sounds like somebody just go like something that Amanda had said to me a long time ago. I've always wanted to go to Waverly Hills
mm-hmm.
and do a ghost hunt there. And I was like, yeah. I'm like, are you nuts? I'm like, you know, do you not know about this place? I'm like, you know, what you see on TV is not. I was like, this place is creepy as all get out. I was like, but it's the same thing. You know, this idea that something paranormal is going on, it piques people's interest and they want to go. They want to have an experience for themselves. And the most amazing thing about this is that these people did. This was not a situation where, well, we stayed in a haunted hotel and nothing really happened. I thought I heard somebody knock on the door, you know, or, you know, I mean, no, that is not what happened. And we're going to talk about that. But I mean, everybody that visited just about came away with an experience that rocked their world.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it was not something that just, it ain't all that, you know, no, I didn't know where to talk about this, but since we were talking about Adams, I will say this. My mom's family is from Clarksville. Mm-hmm. I still have family in Clarksville. And if you know Tennessee geography, Clarksville and Adams are right there. So Clarksville's the big town.
Mm-hmm.
And then Adams is kind of, you know, off to the side. But I would work in Clarksville. And it would require me to go see patients in Adams from time to time. And it was something different. Driving through Adams, the only reason I ever looked forward to going to see a patient in Adams is because there was a little market that sold homemade potato chips. And if you caught them at the right time, they were warm. They were on a card table in front of the register in paper bags. And they had the flavors written in Sharpie on the outside. And they were amazing. And so if I would be like, ugh, I got to go to Adams today. But I get to go by that market and get some potato chips. I would buy like 4 bags.
Yeah.
You know, every different flavor I could find.
Worth it.
Other than being on the phone with my mom, talking about something unrelated and going, I'm in Adams. And she's like, you're in Adams. And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, why are you in Adams? And I was like, I've got to go see a patient up here. And I said, I'm just about to pass the turn where you go to the cave, and then click, phone goes dead. And I mean dead. I don't mean like I dropped a call. I mean, my phone turned into a brick for a solid 3 minutes until I got far enough away from the cave that it came back. I mean, you know, nothing.
That's crazy.
It wouldn't do jack squat.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I wasn't even at the cave. I was at the road that you turn to go to the cave.
Right. Right.
It's like, geez. But let's talk about what happened up there. So it's the summer of 1817, and the Bell family began experiencing some unexplainable phenomena. John Bell encountered a bizarre animal that he said resembled a dog with a rabbit's head. He was out walking in his cornfield, and he sees this thing, and he's not really sure what it is. So what do you do when you see an animal you're not sure what it is? You shoot it or shoot at it. And
makes sense.
It ran off. Now, John's son, Drury. Yeah. He said that he saw giant birds. Okay. These really bizarre birds that were immense in size. And Betsy claimed to have seen apparitions, including a girl in a green dress hanging from a tree. This is all happening on the farm.
That's okay? Ugh, creepy.
But pretty soon it got it advanced. Okay, so odd noises began to occur inside the Bells' house. They would hear pounding and knocking on the walls and doors. They would hear the sounds of rats gnawing at the bedposts, chains dragging, and the sounds of invisible animals fighting, mostly dogs.
Jeez.
So you hear dogs fighting, and mm-hmm. if you've ever heard animals fight, like you're laying in bed and you hear animals fighting, it is the worst sound. It drags you out of bed. You have to check it. You're worried about your own animals.
Mm-hmm.
But when you didn't have that enough animals to be fighting like that, or you look down and your dog is laying on the ground asleep and mm-hmm. you're hearing animals fighting in your house, and you can't find it. That's going to freak you out a little bit.
For sure.
Now, these disturbances quickly escalated to full-on physical assaults, like the bedclothes being torn away, covers just ripped off the bed, pillows jerked out from under people's heads, laying there in the bed, and the pillow just gets yanked out.
Hair being pulled. Making you mad.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Trying to sleep and pillow jerked out from under.
It's that move. You want to pull the pillow so they raise up and then fall back and knock their head on the headboard. Mm-hmm. But the hair would be pulled and sharp objects stabbing the Bell children, especially Betsy. And some go into detail and say the sharp objects are like pins, like hat pins and sewing pins and needles and such. Now, amidst all of this, John Bell began suffering from this, some say, a facial paralysis, like Bell's palsy. How apropos that he would develop Bell's palsy.
Right. Is it named after him?
Honestly, I don't know. I don't think so. I think it's named after the doctor that discovered it, but I'm not 100% sure on that. But some sources will say it was a malady of the mouth. It affected his speech. But it just came out of nowhere. And then the violence against Betsy intensified. She would be slapped, pinched, and even rendered unconscious. You imagine having your 12-year-old daughter, and this is happening to her on a regular basis with no explanation.
Yeah, and you have nobody that you can beat the crap out of for doing it.
Betsy would have red marks on her face and body. Would just, fall out for no reason. Okay? Would scream when something was pinching her. I mean, it wasn't like a gentle, playful thing.
Yeah.
At this point, the phenomena was known as the Bell Witch. It was given that name. And then it began to speak.
Shit.
Now, at the beginning, the speech was very faint, and some say almost pleasant. But then it became more clear and audible, and it revealed itself as Kate. It would recite sermons that were given miles apart. It gossiped about neighbors, and it demonstrated a knowledge of scripture and local events and distant occurrences.
Hmm.
On one occasion, the witch known as Kate recited two sermons, word for word, while they were going on at the same time, 13 miles apart.
That's weird.
Yeah, I mean, you realize, the preachers, even today, most of them don't get up there and shoot from the hip,
mm-hmm.
and just, they've written out their sermon. So you can verify Oh, well, this was today's sermon. Here it is. It's written out on paper. I read this. This was my sermon. I wrote it, you know, during the week, and I gave it on Sunday. So they verified that she was giving these sermons word for word while in the Bell house. And these churches were miles apart.
See, and that requires, if you're not, if you don't have them right in front of you, what that requires is at least three different simultaneous astral projections.
Mm-hmm.
That requires you to project to one sermon, to another sermon, and to the Bell family farm, and then somehow be able to speak in, you might have to project to the Bell family farm twice.
Yeah.
So you can repeat the stuff and not, I mean,
yeah,
it's crazy.
And this became a regular occurrence as far as the Bell Witch being able to relay information that was going on far away. So, like, during conversations, full-on conversations this family had with this entity,
mm-hmm,
it would almost seem like the spirit would leave, supposedly to visit other homes in the area, and then it would come back and relay gossip of what she had learned.
Hmm.
So the Bell family, they tried to pray this witch away.
Right.
But that only seemed to make things worse. Okay? Because the voices would become louder and more forceful. The voice would insult John, calling him Old Jack, was its nickname for John. It would curse and threaten him repeatedly. And the spirit also would torment Betsy verbally, and that intensified when she became engaged to a man named Joshua Gardner, who the witch hated immensely.
Huh.
And I don't think, I did not find anything that gave any specific reason as to why the Bell Witch hated Mr. Gardner, but it's a well-known part of these stories is that,
yep,
the witch had it out for this Joshua Gardner. And at times they said that she would be pleading with Betsy. You know, please, Betsy, not Mr. Gardner, not Gardner. You know, you don't want him.
Yeah. And the only thing I can think of is anytime I've heard that is two different things. Either one, jealousy that Betsy's going to be taken away, mm-hmm, you know, married, move away, won't have the same control over her. Or two, they've had a run-in with Joshua before.
Yeah.
The witch has, and that's the reason she doesn't like him. She, some interaction that she had with him prior.
Right. And like I said, even though I didn't necessarily find it, doesn't mean it's not out there.
Yeah.
But it was, like I said, it's a very common thread in these stories that Betsy's engagement to Joshua Gardner fueled the Bell Witch considerably.
Mm-hmm.
Now, pretty soon, like I mentioned earlier, this haunting began to draw crowds from across the area. And the Bell Witch shared personal secrets and spoke in voices familiar to visitors. So she would use accents and even like impersonations of people that these visitors knew that wasn't there, and would tell them things that they told no one.
Yeah. Like do their dad's voice or something.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're relaying these personal secrets, something maybe that only you felt or thought. And then she would just share it. And you'd be like, there's no way she would have known this.
I'd be so mad.
No. You know,
Adam thinks he has a small butt. And why are you telling people that?
Old Paula Watson over there likes to chew her toenails.
Yeah.
I mean, you're like, shh, don't be telling people that.
I didn't think anybody knew about my toenail fetish.
But reports from the visitors claimed that the entity visited distant places and would repeat conversations that it could not have overheard, which that furthered this inexplicable reputation of what was going on. You know, it just made it more outrageous.
She wasn't just a peeping Tom that would peer in neighbors' windows.
Yeah,
she had some other
or just a ghost or poltergeist, as she's referred to, that's somehow tied to the home. And I know the poltergeist thing gets brought up because it seemed to have this attachment to Betsy. And what do we know about poltergeist activity is young teenage preteen girls, they tended to exacerbate poltergeist activity in a home.
Right.
It's just an odd connection that we discussed in our episode about poltergeist. So a lot of people, when they refer to the Bell Witch, they do refer to this as like a poltergeist haunting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, ministers and scholars would travel from across the country just to get an opportunity to witness this stuff. And all of them were shaken up by what they heard. The voice would insult, threaten, and sometimes even predict events that would eventually come to pass.
Huh.
Now, the story claims that people that spent time with the family to witness the goings on were never the same, with people describing the entity as something intelligent and cruel. So, you know, if you had the opportunity to experience this, it, like I said, it rocked you. I mean, it shook you to your core. And
life-changing.
Why not? I mean, if something like that happened today, I mean, it would shake the foundations.
Yeah.
I mean, really. Yep. Imagine
giving away personal secrets to the people you kind of know. And
well, just imagine if you went to a friend or a family member's house and they said they had this weird haunting going on, and you showed up and it greeted you by name as you walked in the door, and you're like, how does it know who I am? And then began to spout off information about you, you know, would have a conversation about you, would question your religious beliefs or challenge your intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just kind of like taken aback. You know, it's like, you know, going to visit somebody on Thanksgiving and their drunk uncle decides to attack you. You're like, what the hell is going on, man?
Yeah.
What did I do to you?
Yeah, listen, Carl.
That's
you
what.
Shut up. Yeah, go hit the bottle again.
That is exactly what people would experience when they went into the Bell's home.
Yeah.
Now, of course, if this happens, what are you going to do? You're going to go, who are you?
Mm-hmm.
What do you want? Why the hell are you here? And that was asked often by guests wanting to know, why are you torturing this family? What is your reasoning? And the voice would answer, but it would rarely give a straight answer, and it would change its answers. One time it responded with, quote, I am a spirit. I was once happy, but I have been disturbed. And the spirit would offer diverse explanations as to why it had appeared to the Bell family. And it would often say that it was tied to the disturbance of a Native American burial mound that was located on the property. Hmm. And even one time it sent Drew Bell and Bennett Porter on a wild goose chase in search of buried treasure. You know, telling them that there was all these Native American treasures buried on the property and was supposedly telling them where they could find it. Nope. You know, I know, just messing with you.
Yeah. I know gold fever is a thing. And, you know, that's how people ended up in California and Montana and all this stuff, yeah, chasing gold. But if you've got a ghost tormenting you who then says, I came from Native American burial grounds, but if you go dig in more of these Native American burial spots, you'll find gold, I'd go, screw you.
Yeah.
I am not digging there,
yeah,
because that's apparently what caused you to show up. If I do it, what else is going to show up?
Right. So the Bells, they decided to invite their family friend, James Johnston, who witnessed these events one night after going to bed.
He coached the Cowboys, didn't he? No, wait, that was Jimmy Johnson. That was Jimmy Never Johnson. Mind.
Yeah.
Never mind.
But the next morning, James came out and told the Bells that the witch was a spirit just like in the Bible. You know, it was some kind of terrible demon, haint, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you read about. Just like the demons that Christ cast out, this was what they had. And they honestly didn't have any reason to disbelieve that.
At that point, I mean,
right,
it's as good a guess as any.
Now, James Johnston's son, John, can imagine having all these people named John James Johnston? I mean,
yeah.
I know people go nuts with J names. I mean, I've got friends that everybody in their family has a J name. I don't know why.
How many Johns do we have now in this story already?
Everybody's named John.
Like, every other person is named John.
And then they're like, John Johnston?
Yeah.
Come on. Why not name him Clyde or something? You
know? Yeah. John, Johnny Joe Johnston.
Yeah. Well, you can call me Ray. You can call,
you can call me
but
Ray.
But you don't got to call me Johnston.
Yeah.
So.
You can call me John, but don't look at my Johnston.
The witch looked. And then made a comment about its size.
And told everybody about it.
That's exactly right. You know, Adam, one of my favorite things is learning about a topic. And I'm one of those guys that when I get into a new interest, I dive into it like full force.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like a human meme.
Yeah.
Okay? You know,
headlong into it.
It's like, you know, I buy a smoker, and it's like 6 weeks later, I'm auditioning for like Grill Master or something. You know, it's just totally, and I've researched every possible thing I can, you know, bought all the accessories and stuff. You know, that to me is how masterclass is.
Yeah.
You know, you have an interest. You have something that you're like, you know what? I would really like to learn more about that. I guarantee you can find a masterclass that meets that need that you can just dive into and learn.
Yep.
And like learning about interior design from Joanna Gaines.
Mm-hmm.
Or how to apply improv to your daily life with Amy Poehler.
Right.
I mean, these people, they are the experts in this area. And their masterclass can share their knowledge with you.
And you talk about smoking, they have a masterclass on Texas barbecue.
Absolutely.
So if you
want
to go headlong, they got one.
Yeah. I mean, it's endless what you can do. And it's such an amazing value for the resource that you get.
Mm-hmm. And with masterclass, you can learn from the best to become the best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. And with Masterclass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest schedule. schedules. And that's true because you can listen on the go, which is what I do a lot when I'm running to pick up the kid or something like that. I put on a masterclass and learn in that time that I'm driving. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch masterclass. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. If for some weird reason you don't like it, in the first 30 days you can get your money back. So right now, our listeners can get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/graveyard.
That's right. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/graveyard. masterclass.com/graveyard. You know,
John Johnston's Johnson is
exactly.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, come on now.
She starts talking and I can see him running through the house screaming to try to get over her voice. It just Don't let nobody's listening.
Do y'all want to know what John Johnston did in the bathroom last night?
Yeah.
He went out to the outhouse and shut up.
So I was constipated. Yeah.
So this is John Johnston. This is James Johnston's son, family friend. He decided that he was going to test the witch by asking it something that no one outside of his family would know.
Bad idea.
So Johnston asked the entity what his Dutch step-grandmother in North Carolina would say to their slaves if she thought they had done something wrong. And the witch replied in his grandmother's accent, "Hut tut, what has happened now?" And that little hut tut thing, I remember when I was a kid learning about the Bell Witch in school, you know, that hut tut, you know, line. But that is a very specific phrase. And to do it in that accent of their grandmother. So this is what I'm talking about. Mimicking people that were not there, that there was no way the witch would know, or at least you thought there was no way they would know. So it makes you wonder, okay, was this entity able to transverse space and time and see this grandmother and witness her, or is the witch somehow able to penetrate people's minds and read their thoughts and understand, okay, he's thinking of the answer that he is wanting to hear. And this is it. We don't really know, but there's more evidence coming up that this witch may indeed have been able to transverse space and time. This account is of an Englishman who stopped to visit and he offered to investigate. Can you imagine knocking on the door? "Hey, I hear you have a ghost or witch or haint or something.
Yep.
I am offering my services to investigate." Can you imagine what the Bell family's like?
I'll look into it.
Yeah.
Yep.
The Bell family's like, "Be our guest, you know, dummy." Yeah. You know?
"Here's the key to the shack. Where's yours?"
Yeah.
"I'll go live where you live for a while."
Exactly.
"You stay here."
So he comes in and, after this Englishman was discussing his family, which was overseas, the witch suddenly began to mimic his English parents.
Huh.
Now, again, in the early morning, the witch woke this man up with the voices of his parents, worried as they had heard his voice as well.
Oh, geez.
So now she is like a transcontinental walkie-talkie.
Mm-hmm.
So she had apparently visited his parents and used his voice to convey some message from him to them.
Can you imagine if you're them You're minding your own business. You have no idea any of this is going on. And all of a sudden, your son's voice resonates through the house.
Right.
Saying something.
Yeah.
And how freaked out would you be?
I mean,
like, if I was at home and Michael was just at school, not in another continent on the other side of the world, but just at school, and I heard his voice ringing through the house, I'd freak out.
Yeah. Yeah. And rightfully so. And so did this guy. Yeah. So, he left pretty quick that morning. And later on, he wrote a letter to the Bell family that the entity had indeed visited his family in England, and he apologized for his skepticism.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's what you do. I mean, you're like, well, I thought y'all were full of crap, but you're not, and I'm sorry.
Sorry about that.
Right. Yep.
Sorry I was a jerk.
Yeah. But as Adam mentioned earlier, prior to his presidency, General Andrew Jackson, historically, he was known to have brought his men to Red River to investigate the haunting. And the spirit didn't take too kindly to the rugged general known as Old Hickory due to his rough and hard nature, and succeeded in frightening the men away. And Adam gave that famous line that Jackson reportedly said was, "I'd rather face the entire British army than the Bell Witch."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you've studied, and I have, because I grew up in Tennessee. I don't know that most people have studied Andrew Jackson.
Probably not.
He earned that nickname, Old Hickory. I mean, he mm-hmm. was tough as nails.
Yep.
And for something to shake him up, it's, you know, pretty amazing. But
and
as Adam said,
an aside,
there is some evidence that he did indeed visit. They just attribute this quote to him. I don't know that he actually said it, but it's very well, it's very well documented, and the quote doesn't change. So,
yeah, just as an aside, if you're in Tennessee, go check out the Old Hickory Homestead.
Yeah.
Do the tour. It's worth it.
The Hermitage.
I've
absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah.
The Hermitage. It's worth it. Check it out.
It is an amazing tour. Here's an even bigger aside. I, as a part of a school project, worked as a tour guide at the Hermitage.
Really?
Yeah. We were all in like fourth or fifth grade. We were all assigned a certain part of the house or the garden, and you had a little spiel that you had to learn and recite. And so we were the tour guide. So all the regular people that came to take the Hermitage tour got to experience us, you know, all throughout the grounds in the house, giving our little spiel.
Your fourth or fifth grade?
Yeah.
I don't know if that'd be worth it. Having a fourth or fifth grader tell me stuff.
Write it. We just had to learn it.
Yeah, but do I get a discount for this? A fifth grader telling me.
It was cute. I mean, it was cute.
Well, you think so because you were one of
that's
them.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Wearing our little shirts that said, "Follow me to Tennessee."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you something.
That's what you do.
About Andrew Jackson. He was so cool.
That's the way it'd have been if we'd have written it. Yeah. Andrew Jackson is my favorite president, and here are three reasons why.
His name was Old Hickory. I love the Hickory tree.
Yep. But we did that. It is cool. So, you know, most people don't necessarily think about visiting historical landmarks like that, but especially when you're coming to Middle Tennessee. But, you know, if you're into history, you will absolutely love this tour.
That's why I loved it. But I mean,
yeah,
to each their own.
But back to this. So as twisted and evil as this witch seemed, she uncharacteristically showed considerable kindness to John Bell's wife, Lucy. The spirit even referred to Lucy as, quote, the most perfect woman to walk the earth. And she would bring her fresh fruit and sing hymns to her.
It's all making sense now. She is jealous of John Bell and is in love with Lucy.
Maybe.
And it wanting to everybody else go away and leave me with Lucy.
It could possibly be. But John Jr., she also would show some level of respect to him. And that also seemed very out of character for her. But nobody was really sure why. Now, after 3 years of nonstop attacks and harassment, John Bell's physical health started to decline. I think mine would have started probably within 3 weeks.
Yeah, okay? It wouldn't have taken
3 years he put up with this.
Tough dude.
He became bedridden and eventually passed away in December of 1820. Now, his family believed that the Bell Witch had caused his death by giving him some kind of poison. They actually found a mysterious vial of black liquid in the house. And the witch actually commented about this and said, "It's useless for you to try to revive, to It's useless for you to try and relieve old Jack. I've got him this time. He will never get up from that bed again." And when she referred to the vial, she said, "I put it there and gave old Jack a big dose out of it last night while he was asleep, which fixed him."
Jeez.
John Bell died the very next day. The family tossed the liquid into the fireplace where it sparked into a bright blue flame. And nobody could explain that. You know, what could have been in there that would have caused a blue flame to burst out of the fireplace. But many historians consider this to be the first documented death in U.S. history attributed to a haunting. So, you know, you can believe this story or you cannot believe it, but it is incredibly well documented.
Yeah.
And historians to look back at all of the information that they have available to say, we have nothing else to support John Bell's death other than the Bell Witch. I mean, you know, surely at some point, somebody would have uncovered something that would have said, it was a hoax. They were doing it. But they haven't. They haven't been able to.
The only thing I've seen on that note is I was reading a small little blurb about a toxicologist investigating this case. And they said it sounded like arsenic poisoning.
Yeah.
Okay. If it was arsenic, how did the witch get it to him and make him drink it? And two, arsenic doesn't blow up into blue flames, as far as I know.
No.
So, I don't know. But they were talking about, apparently his breath smelled like garlic or something, and that's a sign.
Yep.
I'm like, okay, but none of his family, like, benefited from him dying or wanted him dead.
That's another thing. So, because we're going to talk about some theories, and there is one that believes that somebody in the family had it in for him. But I'm like, this was not a time where you were going to have a giant windfall by the patriarch of the family dying and all of a sudden everybody gets rich.
It wasn't like they had life insurance.
Exactly. So this would have made things a lot worse for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't understand. This would have had to have been a crime of just hatred.
Right.
And why would it take 3 years and draw so much attention? Yeah. I mean, I can understand the idea that you could say, oh, well, they did all this to throw the suspicion away from them for 3 years.
Yeah, that's a long game.
I'm like, listen, you're talking about the, you know, early 1800s, people just died and they didn't know why. And they didn't have pathology reports to, you know, so, I mean, if you really, truly hated this guy enough to kill him, to poison him, why didn't you just do that?
Yeah.
I mean, I really don't think there would be a whole lot of people coming around asking questions. You didn't have Andrew to put Jackson, on this big charade.
Yep. Have Andrew Jackson there and have to scare him.
Yeah.
And everything to just get rid of John.
Yeah. But we'll talk more about that in a minute. During John Bell's funeral, the witch reportedly sang drinking songs and mocked the mourners.
Oh, geez.
But with John Bell dead, it did seem that the witch's goal had been achieved. So in 1821, as a result of the witch's constant harassment, Betsy decided to call off her engagement to Joshua Gardner. She has been engaged to this guy for going on 4 years, constantly being harassed by this spirit about not marrying him. And then finally, after her dad dies, she's like, okay, I'm not going to marry this guy.
Poor Joshua, too.
Yeah, he had to live through all that stuff, too. Mm-hmm. You know,
he's like, if you were going to break up with me, do that 4 years ago so I didn't have to deal with all this stuff.
So I could have left.
I put up with all this stuff for you.
Right.
And now you just leave me?
I'm sitting here, you know, nursing your wounds, holding you while you're crying because the ghost said something mean or poked you with a pen or something.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're going to, you know, dump me? Come on.
Yeah.
I paid my dues.
Rude. Just rude.
So after all that, the entity told the family that it was going to leave, but that it would return in 7 years in 1828. And true to her word, she did.
Hmm.
When the Bell Witch reportedly returned in 1828, she focused her attention on John Bell Jr., who, as I mentioned earlier, she had shown some level of respect to.
Yeah.
Now, during this period, the haunting was considerably different. She would engage in lengthy conversations with John Jr. About like the origin of life, Christianity, and the need for spiritual awakening. Remember, she seemed to know scripture extraordinarily well. She would recite sermons and sing hymns. So there was some religious aspect to whatever was behind this haunting. But during this visit, the witch also allegedly offered accurate predictions of future events like the Civil War.
Hmm.
And after these conversations, she promised to return in 107 years in 1935 to visit John Bell Sr.'s most direct descendant. Now, there are no credible records of the Bell Witch returning in 1935. This promise was a part of the legend, but there's no reported incidents or witnesses from that year. And some descendants claimed that they had seen some signs of the entity's return, but there's nothing, you know, concrete.
So for 107 years, the family fretted over this.
Yeah, this coming around. Imagine
worried
that story being passed down, you know, to each generation. The most direct descendant was Dr. Charles Bailey Bell, who wrote a book about the Bell Witch prior to 1935, but did not report any paranormal activity from the promised time frame. So We don't exactly know, you know, why some people use this as like, I see it's all of it, you know, who knows? Okay. But for whatever reason, she didn't. During that time of that 7 year, that first 7 year stretch, there were other incidences. They were nothing compared to what happened, but there was always these little things that would indicate that she was still around. Okay. So it was like, she's gone, but is she really gone? Is she just laying low and staying quiet? Which leads me to talk about the Bellwitch Cave.
Mm-hmm.
It played a relatively minor role in the original Bellwitch legend. The cave sits on John Bell's property, and it's kind of become a focal point for visitors that visit there hoping to get a little piece of the haunting. Now, there are a lot of different stories about the Bellwitch Cave. People that have visited, people that have had weird phenomena happen, you know.
One that I heard, a caver, local caver, was, I mean, he caved in all these caves around here. Mm-hmm. But there was this one particular cave close to the, what could have been the Bellwitch Cave. Mm-hmm. He wasn't 100% sure, but he said he was about to exit the cave and a large canine type creature attacked him.
Mm-hmm.
And left cuts up and down his arm.
Yep.
And he said, I'll go in any cave in this area, but I will never go back in that cave. Yeah.
I recall that story too. I mean, that was big news, you know, when mm-hmm. when that happened.
That wasn't that many years
ago. Oh, no. That's a modern story.
Yep.
You can visit it, but you can't go in it from what I understand now. They've had events where you could, they've had like overnight events where you can camp up there at the cave over the years, but I think it's just, it is such a unique piece of Americana that it draws people from all over the world to come and visit it. And mm-hmm. I think it's just gotten to the point where it's just like, we just can't have all this going on here. It's just not safe.
And it'll destroy ecology.
Exactly.
I mean, you've got, yes, it's the Bellwitch Cave. And so there's supposedly paranormal stuff that happens there, but there's also nature that goes on in this area, mm-hmm. animals, plants and stuff. And you can't just have 100,000 people a year mm-hmm. randomly walking in and out of this cave, climbing down in it, mm-hmm. and
yeah, it's
breaking
dangerous.
Stuff. And
plus, you got to remember where Adams is. It's right there on the Kentucky state line. And what do we know about Kentucky? I mean, Mammoth Cave is, I mean, that within the last 10 years, they have found other cave systems that are known
mm-hmm.
that actually connect to Mammoth Cave.
It's pretty mammoth. Yeah.
I mean, it's the largest cave network. And, you know, they continue to find that other cave systems in Kentucky actually do connect to it in some fashion. So there's always that chance that deep in this cave, there's more that could connect to Mammoth Cave. And, you know, just like these cavers, man, if you're a caver, this is off topic, but if you're a caver, you are a lunatic. Okay. I'm just telling you, in my opinion, which means jack squat, but I think you are insane because
right.
I have gone to Mammoth Cave. I have taken the tour. And I mean, there are literally handrails and lights on the tour that I've had. And I got nervous. So
yeah,
you people that have dug around and crawled on your bellies to get to other parts of this cave, you're nuts.
Yeah. We did a side quest about cave and caving, and I was in cold sweats reading about people doing this stuff.
Oh God. Yeah.
You know, I've been in a few caves, and like you, I'm walking, standing upright, walking, and I still feel weird about it. I couldn't crawl through spaces.
Sure. So the back to the Bellwitch Cave. The Bellwitch Cave was added to the National Historical Registry in 2008, and the cave is the only original feature from the legend that can still be seen today. And it's largely unchanged from the way the Bell family would have seen it in 1817. It is also suspected that the cave may have served as the witch's hideout during the time between 1821 and the witch's return in 1828. Now, in one particular part of the legend that has the cave featured, young Betsy Bell and some of her friends had gone to explore the cave. While they were there, one of the boys crawled into a hole and became stuck. A voice cried out, "I'll get him out." And the boy felt hands grasping his feet, and he was pulled out of the hole. The entity, which was still invisible, then gave the young explorers a lecture on reckless cave exploring.
Good. Good.
And that's really weird.
And just think about this. Had it not been for a invisible paranormal entity, possibly a witch, this boy would have been stuck and died in a hole in a cave.
Right. Yeah.
And you can't go caving and always expect there to be an invisible paranormal entity to pull your butt out of a hole.
That's very true. I rarely depend on invisible paranormal entities. They are just known to be
unreliable. Yeah.
Now, numerous strange events have been reported by visitors to the cave, including the most common one is the difficulty in taking photographs around the site. Now, this was in the pre-digital time, so film would be overexposed. You couldn't get pictures developed, things like that. Mm-hmm. But like I said, nothing on the scale of what the original haunting of the Bell family was like, okay?
Right.
The house was torn down, and it's been gone since, you know, the 1800s, so there's nothing else there to see that is attached to this legend.
And they moved that one cabin next to the schoolhouse. So
yeah.
You can see that, but it's not
where it was. Farm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the question that I pose and that a lot of people pose is who or what was the Bell Witch?
Mm-hmm.
So if the legend is to be believed, who was it? What was it? What was it doing and why? This is the question that was posed to the spirit multiple times by multiple people, but no one ever seemed to get a consistent answer. And at one point, she told the family, "I am the spirit of a person who was buried in the woods nearby, and the grave has been disturbed. My bones disinterred and scattered, and one of my teeth was lost under this house, and I'm here looking for that tooth." When John pried up the dadgum floorboards in the house looking for this lost tooth, the witch laughed at him, claiming that the whole thing was a joke. And the witch just kept changing her story. Now, at one point, one of her interrogators, a man named Reverend James Gunn, got the name out of her, Kate Batts. Now, Batts was a woman who lived in Red River and was sometimes described as the witch's human exponent and was known in town as, I love this, a big woman, strident and coarse. Is that a compliment? Does it sound like
it? I don't think so. No. I don't think that's a nice way.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a nicer way of saying something,
right.
But
I don't know. But the witch then immediately denied that she had any connection to bats, but yet from that point forward answered to the name Kate.
Huh.
Now, because of Gunn's conversation with the spirit, Mary Catherine Kate Batts, the wife of Frederick Batts, was believed by many to have been the culprit behind the disturbances, which became known as the Bell Witch. Now, it says Kate Batts was not a poor woman. She was often mocked by others throughout the Red River settlement in Robertson County. Her improper usage of words, along with her sometimes strange ways, led many to think that she was practicing black magic or other forms of the occult. Again, we're talking about the early 1800s. You know, if somebody doesn't comply with how society operates, they are considered different, maybe even an outcast. And
even says something that in a way that you feel is weird and you're like, oh, she's a witch.
You know, what
she said, pecan and not pecan. Yeah. So she's a witch.
If she floats, she's a duck. So this is what people did.
She made me pecan pie instead of pecan pie.
And it was
I think she's
it was
a witch.
Terrible. I ate every bit of it. So as for Kate Batts, there are stories that connect her in some way to John Bell. One story claims that the two were entangled in a bitter land battle. In the early years of the century, a man named Benjamin Batts, who was the brother of Kate's husband, Frederick, had a dispute with John Bell over the sale of a slave. Facts of the dispute were later twisted and became the source of a rumor to the effect that John Bell and Kate Batts had the quarrel and that the Bell Witch was created by Kate Batts to get revenge on Bell. Reports circulated that Kate Batts vowed to get revenge on John Bell from her deathbed. It gets even weirder. Another story comes from the North Carolina telling of this legend. And it involves a little love tryst between John Bell and Kate Batts.
Of course.
They allegedly had an affair for some time, and John Bell eventually broke it off. Kate became enraged and threatened to tell everyone, including Bell's family, of the affair. But to keep her quiet, John Bell tied her up in a smokehouse and let her die. Like, whoa, that's extreme.
That is extreme.
And she allegedly came back from the dead and haunted Bell's family, causing one son, Benjamin, to die at an early age and made their crops fail. And her spirit allegedly followed the family to Tennessee from North Carolina, where the haunting continued.
If that is the case, why was she nice to Lucy?
Exactly. Yeah.
So it doesn't seem right.
She would seem she would hate Lucy.
That, yeah, she'd be.
Lucy would have been
just as,
you know, probably more, would have garnered much more negative attention if this was the case.
Yeah.
If she wouldn't have dealt with
the kid Betsy.
Yeah.
She would have done it to Lucy.
Right. I agree.
So.
Now, John Bell and Kate Batts both lived in the same area at the time, and Benjamin Bell did in fact die at an early age, but a lot of people did back then. But there is no actual proof that John Bell and Kate Batts were romantically involved or that she came back from the dead to haunt his family. In fact, historical records show that she outlived John Bell by 23 years. And that so that discredits both stories.
Yeah.
You know?
I was going to say, how would there be proof that she came back from the dead anyway? Yeah,
I think a lot of this is people going back and trying to to write the,
yeah,
you know, the prehistory to what happened.
Retroactively making a history of it.
You take a whole bunch of rumors and everything, and then you kind of squish it together, and it makes your story a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
But there is another story that John Bell killed his slave overseer, a man named John Black, because he developed a fondness for their oldest daughter, Mary. Now, Black allegedly haunted the family from his grave, causing their crops to fail and ultimately forcing them to move to Tennessee. However, there is no historical evidence of John Black or his death. So, I mean, we're talking about a figure that probably didn't even exist.
Yeah, whole thing made up.
But as I mentioned before we got into this, there are some other theories, and I'm just going to touch on them briefly. We're not going to dig into these. But some of the other theories are there is a human conspiracy going on here. Now, some allege that the phenomena were staged to cover up John Bell's possible murder, pointing to family disputes. And one theory suggests that Lucy Bell and Kate Batts conspired against John to murder him. And I guess it could have happened. It just, again, we talked about it. Why take 3 years to do it? You know, just.
And what are you gaining out of it other than
I'm
angry and want to do it? There's no actual, you know, like I said, there's no life insurance for them to say, okay, let's get rid of it, make it look like a haunting. And if you help me, I'll give you $50,000 of this life insurance and we'll just make it seem like a paranormal.
Or like, I'll give you half of this land. Well, wait a minute. So you're going to kill your husband and lose half of his stuff? How does that work? You know, I don't know that I buy that at all.
No.
Another one is the Native American burial ground that that Kate, the Bell Witch, mentioned. This claim is that the Bell land was on top of a Native American burial site, which resulted in a disturbed spirit or an ancient curse. This one, I don't know. I think this, what's crazy is this actually seems more plausible than Lucy murdering. You know, is that, that if that sounds even, I mean, really, it does.
That's the crazy part about this whole thing is that is the most logical.
Right.
Of all the theories so far.
Yeah. Because the spirit does mention multiple times that there is a Native American burial mound on John Bell's property, that she was somehow disturbed, or her grave was disturbed. That's mentioned several times. Now, it's not always in connection with the burial mound. It may be like I'm just somebody that's buried in the woods, but whatever. So it's really hard to tell because the, you know, all of the stories and all of the records, the witch is notoriously inconsistent with her stories, not necessarily because she doesn't realize what's going on. It's that she wasn't truthful, you know? So, you know, again, I imagine, you know, why should I tell them, you know, anything real? You know, I'm driving them nuts just by telling them all these stories.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's an idea that there was a love triangle going on and somebody was involved that made all this happen. Like Betsy's eventual husband, a man named Richard Powell. And some say that maybe he orchestrated the events by using psychological manipulation to keep Betsy from marrying Joshua Gardner. Okay. You talk about going to extremes. Okay. Yeah. Betsy was engaged to this guy for 3 years. 3 years. And you want Betsy for yourself. So you are going to orchestrate this insane haunting by manipulating the family and all the people that came over there to believe that this is what was going on and then kill her father. in order to gain her affection.
Well, and here's the other thing. If that were the case, that wouldn't be the only thing this crazy man did.
That's exactly right.
She would have seen other stuff later.
Right.
Like somebody who's that crazy to do all that couldn't just turn it off once he married her.
Yeah, exactly. If he went to those kind of lengths, what, you know, he's not just, you know, all of a sudden it's over. Da, 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 I'm okay.
Uh-huh.
You know,
yeah, I'm fine.
No.
I'm fine. No.
Yeah.
She would have, there'd be another story in American history about this crazy serial killer that was married to Betsy.
Well, it's the old Monty Python line. You're a loony. Then we touched on this briefly, but I hate this poltergeist collective psychosis. So modern skeptics propose that the haunting was a case of a poltergeist phenomena, family stress induced hallucinations, or exaggerated storytelling. Exaggerated oral storytelling, I believe, is absolutely a part of this legend, but that don't think that doesn't make it not true. Okay.
Yeah.
I think that when we're talking about 200 years of this legend, at which the majority of what we know as the story comes from Martin Van Buren Ingram's book about the Bell Witch.
Yep.
But there are so many. There are other books written by other people that witnessed these disturbances. So that is just the most famous and where most people get their, the timeline and things like that.
It's called An Authenticated History of the Bell Witch by M.V. Ingram.
Yeah.
Written in 1894.
Right.
So fairly early in the quote history of all this stuff.
But he went through all of the documentation of the hauntings and talked to as many people that were still living that he could, talked to families of people that had witnessed things. So I mean, he really, I mean, you know, it is the source du jour for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the most amazing thing about this is, despite exhaustive studies, there is absolutely no consensus, and the Bell Witch legend is still one of America's greatest folklore mysteries. You know, there has not been anyone that has successfully debunked it, come up with a plausible explanation, and it endures now. And I'm telling you, you drive through Adams, Tennessee, you feel it. You feel that something is different. Okay? It's just in the air. Even if it's just, you know, you see the sign that says Home of the Bell Witch, you're just kind of like, really? You know, even if you have somehow managed to live under a rock and have no idea about this story at all, you see that sign and Google it, you're like, whoa, where are we? What are we doing? How did we get here?
And then you're like, I just need to get out of here before something happens.
Yeah. And the good thing is that if it does really spook you, you don't just accidentally drive through Adams. You kind of have to be going that way to get there.
Yeah.
But we hope you guys enjoyed this as much as Adam and I did telling the story, because it's not just a part of American history. It's part of my history too, because I grew up, you know, here in Tennessee. You know, it's something that you learn as a small child. You learn the story. You know, I've got family. My mom was, you know, from Clarksville, you know, right up there, you know, in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, I've had friends, come to me with stories, you know, of, You know, I had a friend tell me a story about Kate Batts, you know, and it's just, it is remarkable, and it is awfully, awfully scary. So we hope that you enjoyed this and it makes your Halloween season a little bit spookier than it was before.
Yep.
But don't forget to go and get in our Facebook group. Okay. If you want to talk about the Bell Witch or another legend that's very famous to where you're from, this is a great place to do it. Go on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Graveyard. Now, don't forget, outside of our group on the Graveyard Tales official Facebook page, that is where you will find the link to catch our Halloween night live stream. And this is not going to be like ones we've done in the past. It's going to be interactive. We're going to be talking to people. We're going to be hearing stories, answering questions. We're going to talk about some past shows. It's going to be more interactive than anything Adam and I have done. So please, we would love to have you join us. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think Amanda's going to come on. We've got some other people that may pop in, that are friends of the show. So please join us, check it out, have fun. We're going to do it later in the evening. So if you got kids that you got to take trick or treating, you're not going to have to miss out on that. Cause we got that stuff going on here too.
Yeah. Yeah. We got to do that too.
Okay. But on our website, don't forget, it's graveyardpodcast.com. And there you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. And we've got some new things in there, so go check it out. You can listen to the show, and that is where you can become a patron. And we have a huge back catalog of bonus content for you. Side quests, Patreon episodes, bonus shows, you name it, we got it. Video. You're not only are you helping the show out, you're getting a lot more content. Okay. And it's not all paranormal. So go check it out. So this was fun, Adam. We finally did it.
Oh yeah.
You know, after being asked.
I'm glad we finally put that notch in our belt that we have done the Bell Witch. And now when people ask, we can say, yes, go check out episode blah and get them to it.
Until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.